Hit it, Phil.
Can it be the breeze that fills the trees with rare and magic perfume? Oh, no. It isn't the breeze. It's Jackson time.
Well, it's Thursday. A good time to thank some folks. I want to thank my Super 8. These are the 8 people that have donated since I've started asking for donations again this week. That's Michael and John, Timothy, Bruce, Amrish, Lawrence, Matt, and Eliza. And Timothy wrote something that was very nice that I just thought I would read a little bit to you. I've listened to your podcast for many years, and they have brought much happiness and laughter to my life. I work alone, and they are great to listen to. Folks who see me laughing by myself sometimes feel I am a little strange. I am, but not for that reason. I share many of your insights. Several years ago, you presented a podcast featuring Christmas themes, including one with Bing Crosby and the boys. You mentioned how it is a bit bittersweet, my words, to hear this his son, Lindsay, singing on the special, knowing in a short time his mother would die, and he eventually would as well. I felt and thought that as well. That may be the same season you and your son read a script from a lost episode with your son playing the part of Rochester. It was hilarious. I wish my parents and grandparents were still alive so I could discuss these shows with them. I think they would be truly touched that I knew so much about the performers of their time. I sometimes imagine my father and his parents in their southern Ohio farmhouse, which only received electricity in 1935. Listening to those faraway voices of Jack and the gang transmitted over the airwaves, it had to be something special. My earliest memories are of Jack and Rochester and the Maxwell on repeats of the television show. I've fallen in love with the entire gang now and almost feel I know them personally. As a side note, I have an 84-year-old friend. Telling her about these broadcasts, she remembered an episode of the Phil Harris Show where Phil and Remley are wallpapering. They accidentally covered the window and the door, and she remembered how, as a little girl, she laughed and laughed at that. I actually located the episode and burned it on a DVD for her. She listened to it again after some 70 years, right before she passed away. I thought that was so poetic, romantic, and dramatic. It's hard to believe all of them have been gone so long. I love the interviews you've found and shared. The one of Dennis Day performing in, I believe, Toronto was wonderful. Don explaining he quit smoking Lucky Strikes when the company quit providing for free, providing them for free was hilarious. I could write 2 or 3 more pages, but won't drone on. Anyway, that's just a wonderful email that I received, and I get so many emails from you folks and so many wonderful comments. I just thank you so much. I enjoy bringing you the podcast. You know, without further ado, let's go ahead and bring you the show.
Hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. We have a really interesting Jack Benny show for you tonight. The premise of the show is all around Don Wilson getting married. And in real life, November 19th, 1940, Don Wilson did get married. So I always think it's interesting how, in some ways, the make-believe Don Wilson, Jack Benny, Phil Harris, Mary Livingston, Rochester, how their lives of the real folks that play them sometimes overlap what's going on in the radio series, and sometimes it's very divergent what their life is versus what the character on the radio series does. And a lot of times it's just whether the writers pick up on something or not. In this case, they did pick up that Don Wilson was getting married, and so they wanted to write that into the script, and so that's what it was about. He wasn't married very long in this case. This was his second marriage, and he was married from 1940, and they were divorced by the end of 1942. And then he was married a third time, and eventually his fourth marriage is the one that really stuck for quite a long time, and his fourth wife appeared with him on a local talk show that he was on. From 1968 until like the mid-1970s. Anyway, enjoy this episode of The Jack Benny Show. I love them. I do like these shows that feature Don Wilson more. I think Don, I've thought about recently about all the different announcers on all the different shows and just how much I like Don Wilson better than any of the others. I mean, there's a lot of other great announcers on a lot of different shows, Harry Von Zell and so forth, but I just really like Don. I think Don does a great job, and the way he can just laugh so easily. I really think Don Wilson and Ed McMahon had a lot of the same qualities, and it really helped out Jack Benny and Johnny Carson. And who knows, maybe that's why Johnny was attracted to Ed McMahon, was the fact that he saw that similarity with Don Wilson as well, and he always kind of idolized Jack Benny. So who knows what was going on there. And then I think today we see this modeled again with Conan O'Brien and Andy Richter, and how Andy is similar to Don Wilson and similar to Ed McMahon, but with more of the ability to be the comedian himself, but being willing to be the second banana to Conan. I don't know if you've been watching the Conan show since it's been on TBS, but one thing I've been writing about it on one of the forums that I'm in is just how much it's become a throwback to the old Tonight Show, even more than when Conan was doing the Tonight Show. It didn't feel as strong that way. Conan would never bring Andy Richter over to the couch to have conversations with him, whereas on his new show on TBS, he brings him over to the couch every night, just like Johnny and Ed would do. And I just love that, and I love that a lot of the edge that sometimes would bother me about the Conan's humor, he's really softened it up, and maybe that's because he's on at 11 o'clock at night, I'm not sure, but I just love that show. It's great. And speaking of Johnny Carson and the Tonight Show, I've had some folks requesting some more, that I put on some more Johnny Carson. I don't have that much Johnny Carson, maybe a few more episodes, so I'll try and put some of those out there. But I did pick up from Borders Books this Johnny Carson pre-Tonight Show. It's all his performances from before that. And, man, what a great bunch of discs this is. I can't remember what the actual title is. I think it's The Best of Johnny Carson or something like that. But Best of Johnny Carson and Friends, because the first two, it's a 5-DVD set, and the first two are basically about Carson and some great performances of early Carson before he was on The Tonight Show, and some with Ed McMahon and so forth. They have a nice little spot with James Arness from Gunsmoke that he was just, he hadn't even started Gunsmoke yet. They were talking about how Gunsmoke was going to be start the following week or something like that. So I thought that was interesting. Anyway, then there's a whole disc that's Jack Benny shows. And I'll get into sharing some of those, because some of those shows are really interesting that I had never seen before, featuring Jack Benny. And one of them about CBS's new Television City. Instead of Radio City, they created Television City, which was this huge complex. And it's all about that, but it has so many performers in it. It's just ridiculous. I've never seen anything quite like it. It's got Jack and Rochester and Eve Arden and Lucy and Desi and William Frawley and Vivian Vance, and it's got Alan Reed, and it's got the cast of Amos and Andy from television, and it's got Burns and Allen. I'm trying to think who else. Alan Young. Gail Gordon. Man, just amazing, all the different folks that are on this one show. And the picture quality is horrible. The sound quality is pretty good. I'm thinking about transferring it over so that I could put it on the podcast. It's just, a lot of it's kind of visual, though. I don't know. I'll have to think about that one. Anyway, enjoy tonight's episode of the Jack Benny Show with Don Wilson, and we will be back again next time.
J-E-L-L.
The Jell-O program, starring Jack Benny, with Mary Livingston, Phil Harris, Dennis Day, and yours truly, Don Wilson. The orchestra opens the program with Meet the People. In the newspaper world, ladies and gentlemen, there's a famous saying that names make news. And that's equally true in the field of desserts, where right now the name that's making big news is Jell-O Puddings. Jell-O Puddings are made by the same firm that makes Jell-O, for over 40 years, America's favorite gelatin dessert. And just as you've enjoyed Jell-O, I know you'll really go for these new creamy puddings. Jell-O Puddings are wonderfully quick and easy to prepare, too. Merely add milk, cook a few minutes, and cool. And there's as fine a pudding as ever came out of a kitchen. Gloriously smooth and creamy, and chuck full of rich, mellow flavor. Flavor so delicious that it outrivals any other pudding you've ever tasted. You can enjoy Jell-O puddings in all three of those grand old pudding flavors, chocolate, vanilla, and butterscotch. So do as thousands of others are doing every day. And when you ask your grocer for Jell-O, tell him to include several packages of Jell-O puddings, too. Remember, Jell-O puddings are made by the makers of Jell-O, so you'll know they're good. Meet the People, played by the orchestra. And now, ladies and gentlemen, as is customary every Sunday night...
Wait a minute, Don. Hold everything. This introduction is on me. All right, boys, let's have it. Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to present the bridegroom of the Jell-O program, Don Wilson. Yes, sir. Well, there you are, Don. There's our little send-off for you. And we all wish you and the bride a lot of success and happiness.
Well, thank you, Jack. Thanks very much.
Why, Don, you're blushing.
I am, Don.
You are, too. Look at them, folks. 300 pounds of love. Tell me, Don, where did you spend your honeymoon?
We went down to Coronado Beach for 3 days.
Oh, Coronado is an ideal place for a honeymoon. A beautiful hotel, gorgeous scenery, and a lovely swimming pool.
Yes, and a terrible thing happened, Jack.
What?
We forgot to take our bathing suits.
Oh, that was a shame. A fine honeymoon with no swimming. But I'll tell you one thing, Don.
Hello, Don. Congratulations to the bridegroom.
Well, thanks, Mary.
Isn't that wonderful, Mary? Just think. Little Cupid shot his arrow and hit our own Donzie.
Well, if Cupid couldn't hit Wilson, he ought to go out of business.
Mary, be sentimental, will you? Say, by the way, Don, did you get the wedding present I sent you? I hope you liked it.
Oh, it's beautiful, Jack. Thanks. I haven't seen any of those in a long time.
Well, it was no easy job getting it. I had to shop all over.
What did he give you, Don?
A lovely bowl of wax fruit.
Yes, sir. You know, Don, I was going to send you some silverware, but you know how it is. Everybody sends silverware.
Everybody but Benny. He sends wax fruit.
I knew what I was doing, Mary. You know, newlyweds always get more silver than they can use.
Well, not in our case, Jack. As a matter of fact, we didn't get any silver at all.
Oh, Don, I wish I had known that.
Yeah, you could have sent him a lock of your hair.
All right, Mary, how was I to know?
I never saw anybody like you, Jack. You always give the oldest, corniest presents.
Is that so?
Last year at my birthday, you sent me a bustle.
But it was full of chocolates. Don't forget that. Supposed to be a novelty. I spent $1.50 a pound for that bustle, and she's complaining. Anyway, Don.
Well, what good is candy after you sit on it?
You weren't supposed to sit on it. Anyway, Don.
Hard centers yet.
Now, Mary, forget it. Anyway, Don liked the wedding gift I sent him. He said it was lovely.
Sure was, Jack. But I meant to tell you something about that bowl of fruit.
Oh, is there something wrong with it?
Yes, one of the bananas doesn't light up.
It doesn't?
No.
Well, take it back, brother. Take it back. I bought it at Magnan's, and it's guaranteed.
Magnan's?
Yes, Sam Magnan's. He's got an antique shop in Pismo Beach. Oh, hello, Phil.
Hiya, Jackson. Well, hello, Don. Congratulations.
Oh, thanks, Phil.
So you went and done it, eh, Don, you lucky son of a gun?
Yes, sir, and I'm very happy.
Oh, I envy you, kid. That's the life, believe me.
What?
You know, Jackson, a guy gets pretty tired of running around night after night. No sleep, no home life. What does it get you?
Is he kidding?
No, on the level, fellas, I'd like to move away from the city and buy a little ranch out in the valley.
Well, why don't you?
That fresh air would kill me.
I believe you. Phil, you're a fine guy to talk about settling down. The hours you keep.
Well, I can't help it, Jackson. I work at the Wilshire Bowl every night until 1 o'clock, don't I?
Well?
By the time I get a cup of coffee, it's 4 a.m.
4 a.m.? Phil, why don't you try having a cup of coffee just once without taking the waitress home? Just once.
Well, you know me. I gotta have sugar with my coffee. Do you get it, Jackson?
No, Phil. I'm not as sharp as I used to be.
Well, don't you get it? The waitress is sweet, so I...
Go on, you corny Joe. Mary, can you imagine a guy pulling one like that and then trying to explain it?
You think that's bad? You should have heard the gag he pulled at the bowl the other night.
What was it?
Well, Phil was announcing a song, so he said, "And now, ladies and gentlemen, our next number is all about the manicurist who married the millionaire."
What was the title of it?
"I'll Never File Again."
Holy mackerel! You know, Phil, if you'd keep your mouth shut at the Wilshire Bowl, they could put a cover charge on. Believe me. Oh, hello, Dennis.
Hello, Mr. Benny. Gee, what I know about Don Wilson.
What?
I saw him at the Coronado Hotel last week, and he wasn't alone.
That was his wife.
Oh.
For your information, Dennis, he got married.
Congratulations, Mr. Wilson.
Well, thank you, Dennis.
You know, that marriage business might be all right for a guy like you, but none of that stuff for me.
Listen, young man, it wouldn't hurt you to meet some nice little home girl and settle down.
Nothing doing. I wouldn't give up Hedy Lamarr for anything in the world.
Hedy Lamarr? Why, she doesn't even know you're alive.
I can wait.
Well, Dennis, while you're waiting, how about singing your song right now?
Okay. I'm going to sing Two Dreams Met, and I dedicate it to Mr. and Mrs. Don Wilson and Hedy Lamarr.
All right. Go ahead. Hold it. Come in.
Mr. Benny?
Yes?
I shot an arrow into the air and hit Don Wilson, you know where.
Well, who are you?
I am Cupid with no clothes on. And now I'll run. I'm nearly frozen.
Well, that's the most stupid Cupid I've seen in years. Sing, Dennis.
Hearts that were lonely, that could be so happy if only they found romance. Two dreams met, they said we must go out and find them, and then as we tiptoe behind them, we'll make them dance. A band was softly playing, sweet music fill the air. Turn around, my dream kept saying, I did, and you were there, dear. It seems we stood and talked like this before. We looked at each other in the same way then, but I can't remember where or when. Some things have happened for the first time. Seem to be happening again. Then two hearts met, a beautiful love affair started. The dreams winked their eyes and departed. They knew that their work was done. The two lonely hearts were one.
Very good. That was Two Dreams Met, sung by Dennis Day, and very good. You know, Dennis, there have been a lot of dream songs lately.
Yeah, lately.
Two Dreams Met, Dream Valley, Now I Lay Me Down to Dream of You. That seems to be the vogue right now.
Yeah, the vogue.
Dennis. And they're all good, too. That's the funny part of it.
Talking about dream songs, Jackson, I just wrote a Lulu. It's going to be published in a couple of weeks.
What's the name of your song, Phil?
Eskimo Dream Girl, Don't Blubber Over Me.
Oh, well, that's a beautiful thought. Don't blubber over me. What's it about? Is it a ballad?
Well, it's a sort of a torch song. It's about an American guy that goes up to Alaska and he meets this Eskimo girl.
Uh-huh.
But she can't speak Eskimo, so the
Eskimo?
Guy...
Eskimo? First place, it's but he can't speak Eskimo. What's that?
Well,
That's a language. You don't speak at
That's
all.
Right.
Well. Not even you can't read your own line, but you don't know what page it's on. Well, Phil, what's the outcome of this fascinating saga of the North?
Well, the guy drives away with his dog team.
Uh-huh.
And the girl stands there waving her igloo at him.
Phil, an igloo is a house made of ice.
Oh, well, I better rewrite that part.
Yeah, learn how to read, too.
Reading's not going to help this any. Say, Mary, how about you and me singing it some night? You can be my Eskimo girl.
I'd rather be the dog team.
You got something there.
Speaking of Alaska, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you about Jell-O.
What?
Whether you live in Sitka, Juneau, or Ketchikan, why don't you run down to your neighborhood grocer and catch a box of tempting, delicious Jell-O.
Catch a box? Why, Doc?
For Juneau and I know that it's twice as good as ever before.
I wonder how he's going to work Sitka in there.
So look for the big red letters on the box. I will now Sitka down.
Well, I'll be darned he did it. Don, only the fact that you got married last week excuses that surrealist plot. And now, ladies and gentlemen, at this time, I would like to announce Dennis. What do you got your hand up in the air for?
I want to ask a question.
Oh. Well, in the first place, this isn't a schoolroom. And in the second place, when you want to ask a question, you raise all fingers, not just one. Now, what's the question?
Well, my mother wants to know if we're going to be in Waukegan for the Christmas holidays.
No, Dennis, we're not going to Waukegan. As a matter of fact, fellas, the premiere of my picture is going to be held in New York City.
New York City?
Yes. Alan wanted it in Old Orchard, Maine, and I wanted it in Waukegan, so I figured New York would be a fair compromise.
What do you mean, a fair compromise?
I mean just what I say.
What are you talking about? Old Orchard, Maine is much closer to New York than Waukegan is.
It is not.
It is, too.
Would you like to make a little bet on that, about $50?
You're darn right I would.
Well, go find a sucker. Don't bother me. I guess that'll hold you, brother.
Oh, boy, are you a welcher?
I'm not a welcher. But I don't believe in gambling when there are minors present.
Dennis is over 21.
I mean coal miners. There are three boys in Phil's band from Scranton. The trombone section with the candle in their derby. Now, let's forget it. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Oh, pardon me, Jack.
Yes, Don.
Would you mind terribly if I ran along? I promised the little woman that I'd get home early tonight.
No, no, go right ahead, Don, but I was going to buy you a bottle of champagne across the street at the Tropics right after the show. You know, I think a celebration is in order.
Oh, say, I've got a great idea. Why don't you and the gang come over to the house? I want you all to meet my wife.
Tonight? Oh, Don, that would be an imposition. Five of us barging in without any notice or anything.
Oh, it's no imposition at all. Peggy would love to have you.
But, Don, don't you think you ought to call your wife up and let her know we're coming? You know, barging in like this with a whole gang of people.
No, Jack, the little woman won't mind. Really, she's a peach.
Well, all right. Come on, fellas, let's go. Wait a minute. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester.
Rochester, I haven't got time to talk to you now. We're on our way to the valley.
Well, I heard you say you were going to New York for the premiere. Does that include your loyal, devoted, and I got my clothes packed already, butler?
Yes, but I don't know why I'm taking you. The last time we were in New York, I didn't see you for 2 weeks.
You didn't look in the right places.
I'm not supposed to look for you. You're working for me, remember?
Yes, sir.
Imagine patent already. I never saw anybody so anxious to leave.
Boss, I can't wait till I get to New York.
Uh-huh.
You know, the last time we were there, I only got halfway through the Metropolitan Museum.
Uh-huh.
And the view from the Statue of Liberty. Why, boss... I could just stand there for hours, lost in meditation.
Uh-huh.
And you know that library on Fifth Avenue?
Yes.
Well, that offers endless cultural opportunities of which one must imbibe freely.
I see. Then from what I understand, Rochester, you're only interested in the cultural side of New York.
Up to dusk, then strap me down.
I thought so. I know you look like a book. Now listen, Rochester. I have to prepare for the trip east, so I want you to send my heavy overcoat to the cleaners.
Oh, yes, the one with the green velvet collar.
That's black velvet.
Have you seen it lately?
Never mind. Just send it to the cleaners.
Okay. Oh, say, boss.
What?
I think you ought to give up that job as dog catcher at Beverly Hills.
Why?
You know those two Great Danes you captured yesterday?
Yes.
Well, Mr. Daryl Zanuck was just here and says one of them is his polo pony.
Which one?
The one that whinnies.
Well, all right, give it to him. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Say, boss, I don't think the other one's a Great Dane either.
It is, too.
Okay, I'll take the saddle off. So long.
That's the last time I'll go out chasing dogs without my glasses. Well, come on, fellas, let's go.
I got a cab waiting, Jack.
That's swell, but I still think you ought to call up your wife.
Oh, Don knows what he's doing.
All right, let's go then. Don, I'm still worried. Are you sure your wife won't mind?
No, she'll be delighted to have you.
Am I heavy on your lap, Miss Livingston?
Yeah. Phil, why don't you hold Dennis for a while?
I just had my pants pressed. Put them on the floor.
Phil.
Well, here we are. Driver, pull up at that little white cottage there.
Okay.
Well, this is it, fellas. How much is that, driver?
$2.35.
Here you are.
Wait a minute, Don. Wait a minute. This is on me.
Oh, no. I want to pay it.
Gee, you got a cute house there, Don. Yes, sir.
Nothing doing, Dennis. I want to pay the fare.
Oh, Mr. Harris, let me pay it.
Next time, Dennis. This is my tree.
No, I insist I'm paying.
Got rose bushes around the door and everything. Oh, it's beautiful, you know.
Oh, Jack, pay for the cab and let's go in.
Pay for it? I'm not even in the argument. Oh, all right. How much you say that was, driver?
$2.35.
Here. Here's $2.50. Keep the change.
Oh, goody. Now my wife can have another baby.
Wise guy. Well, let's go in, Don.
You know, Jack, I was just thinking that maybe I should have called up my wife first.
What?
Well, with five people barging in unexpectedly, it might kind of upset her.
That's what I told you at the studio. I told you to call up your wife.
Come on, Don. Don't be afraid. Let's go in.
Oh, it's not that I'm afraid, Phil.
I can understand Don's side of it, all of us barging in like this.
Barging, smarging. I said that at the studio. I said, let's call the little woman up. Call her up, I said.
Quiet, will you? Now, I'll tell you what, fellas. You all hide in the rose bushes, and I'll go in and tell Peggy that some of the gang might drop in unexpectedly. That'll kind of soften the blow.
What blow? I told you at the studio.
Oh, come on, Jackson. Let's do it his way.
All right, all right. Come on, we'll hide in the rose bushes. Ouch, these thorns. Make it snappy, Don. Silliest thing I've ever heard of.
Oh, be quiet and get off my foot.
Oh, hello, sweetheart.
Well, darling, you're home early.
I told you I would be. Gee, I'm hungry, dear. You got something good for supper?
Well, I'm sorry, darling. I didn't have a chance to do any shopping, so I'll just open a can of tuna fish.
Oh, that's swell, dearest.
Been 2.5 already. I'm going to get tuna fish.
What are you worrying about? You're not even in yet.
Thing that burns me up, I'm the guy that told him to call her up.
Hey, Jackson, have you got a cigarette?
What?
I say, have you got a cigarette?
No, here's a cigar.
Thanks. Oh, boy, Corona, Corona.
Don't let the label fool you.
Very funny. I wonder if Don's going to be... Hey, Dennis, stop eating those roses.
Well, I'm hungry.
So am I, but I'm going to wait. How are they?
They need salt.
Oh, stop. Hey, quiet, fellas. The porch light just went on.
Hey, fellas, are you still there?
Yeah.
Well, I just told Peggy that I saw Phil and Mary pulling up in the car, so you two better come on in first.
What about me?
You weren't in the car.
Well, for Pete's sake, I could be. You made the whole thing up. Let's all go in.
No, you can't do that. Mary and Phil come first.
Okay.
See you later, Jack.
It's the darnest mess I ever got into.
Yeah.
I told him at the studio, 5 times. Call her up, Don. Call up your wife. That's all. Call up the little woman. But no, no. He has to be a wise guy. And on top of that, it looks like it's going to rain.
It'll be wonderful for the roses.
Not for the roses. If I get pneumonia once more, I'm a goner.
Yeah.
Roses. Wouldn't mind waiting out here, but the worst of it is I got to talk to you.
What do we talk about?
Nothing. Just be quiet and eat your roses. Getting chilly, too. Here comes Don again.
Psst. Psst. Hey, Dennis, come on in.
Dennis?
Yeah, I told my wife I just saw him riding up on his bicycle.
Well, as long as you're dreaming things up, why didn't you see me on the handlebar? Use your beam.
Don't worry, Jack, you're next. Well, look who's here, darling. Dennis Day.
Look who's here, darling. Dennis Day. I ought to have my head again. I can't get over it. If I told them once at the school, I told them five times. Call your wife. Let's not barge in on the little woman. Oh, fine. It's gonna rain, all right. Can't get over that guy. I begged. I pleaded. Don, I said, call her. Don't barge in on the little woman. Call her up. Let her know we're coming. Never saw anything. I knew it. I knew it. Well, here it comes. I'm gonna get soaked. Oh, the heck with Wilson. I'm going to walk right in that house, ready or not. If he thinks I'm going to stay...
Pick him up, buddy.
Huh?
You heard me. Stick him up.
Stick him up? Are you a burglar?
I ain't Santa Claus.
Now, look. Look, mister...
Come on, come on. Where do you carry it, though?
In my right shoe. But look, mister... I was invited to a party in this house. I'm not even supposed to be out
here.
Get
that shoe off.
Gee, it's raining. I'll get my foot wet. Now, please.
Hey, Jack! Oh, Jack!
Keep your mouth shut or I'll drill you.
But he's calling me. Can't you hear?
Jack! Jack, where are you?
Not a peep out of you, buddy.
There's nobody out there, darling. You must have been mistaken.
Oh, I guess I was, dear.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, buddy. Off with that shoe.
Now, listen, mister. If I take this shoe off, I'll never get it back on again. I haven't got my button hook with me. Now, please, go away.
Come on, give me a dough.
Well, listen, buddy, this isn't fair. I wouldn't have been here at all if Don Wilson had taken my advice.
What are you talking about?
I'm not kidding you, buddy. If I told him once, I told him 1,000 times. Call up your wife, Don. Five people barging in on the little woman. It's an imposition. Buddy, would he listen to me? No. He had to be a wise guy. A smart ass. He wouldn't listen.
Friends, one of the easiest ways to do away with mealtime monotony is to serve a wide variety of desserts. But finding new and different treats for the family is no small task. And so that's why every Sunday we try to bring you some new dessert suggestion. This week's specialty is a swell, eye-filling, taste-teasing dessert that looks like $1,000,000, and yet it's as simple to make as can be. Just make up one package of strawberry Jell-O and whip as directed on the box. Fold in 1 1/2 cups of sweetened cooked apricot pulp. Then pile in sherbet glasses, chill until firm, and there you are. Quick, easy, and delightfully good, a dessert that really tastes grand. For strawberry Jell-O, like raspberry Jell-O, now has a flavor that's better than ever. Obtained by using a natural flavor base artificially enhanced. And that's what gives strawberry Jell-O its new distinctive goodness. Enjoy it tomorrow by serving this gay, creamy combination of golden apricots and rich crimson strawberry Jell-O.
Darn it. I got all my dough. I can't get my shoe back on. Oh, well.
Pardon me. Does Don Wilson live in this house?
He's married, Cupid. You got him once.
Why don't I write things down?
Good night, folks.
J-E-L-L.
Hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. Welcome to another episode of the Fred Allen Show. I have really been enjoying these episodes, and a lot of you have been emailing me saying that you're enjoying them as well. last week we played The Return of the Eagle episode, which was exactly 70 years old. And then I also played, earlier than that, the actual first episode where the eagle comes to visit Fred Allen. And the eagle's name is Mr. Ramshaw. And that first episode is just so funny when he gets loose in the studio and just causes all kinds of havoc. And just the whole show is thrown off. And it was just a wonderful, wonderful episode. And there's just all kinds of stories about that and letters that were written to Fred from the network and Fred writing back to the network and so forth. And I'll have to share some of those at some point. Anyway, I've been reading more about Fred Allen, and I just really have been come to enjoy him this year more than ever before. All the previous years, I've kind of looked at him as an outgrowth of Jack Benny, because I just love Jack so much. But this year, I've started to respect him in his own right, and just what a wonderful comedian he was, and what a wonderful writer, and a wit. He had so much going for him. And I just wish he would have given himself more credit. I may have read this to you before, but I'm going to read this little piece here about him. Let's see, where does it start? Okay. Whether he knows it or not, the comedian is on a treadmill to oblivion. When a radio comedian's program is finally finished, it slinks down memory lane into the limbo of yesterday's happy hours. All that the comedian has to show for his years of work and aggravation is the echo of forgotten laughter. I really don't want that to be the case with Fred Allen, and I don't think it's going to be. I think that enough people listen to him, and certainly because of my podcast, I think I introduce him to a lot more folks. And so I think people will remember Fred Allen. Not as many people as originally knew him, certainly when he was on the radio, and he was, in 1947, the number one show in all of radio. But a lot more people, I think, are remembering him now than, say, 10, 15 years ago. And a lot of people are experiencing him for the first time now. Being as that's the case, and being as this is Thanksgiving week, I want to thank you fans of the podcast for helping me branch out and get into some other radio shows that I hadn't given as much of a chance or as much of a listen to. But by doing the podcast, I kind of have to branch out a little bit. And Fred Allen is one of those things I branched out into. So to celebrate that, this week, this upcoming week, there's a number of shows that I'm missing episodes on. So I've decided to just have a Fred Allen week. And so as we go through the shows, we're still going to have all our regular shows, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull the episodes where Fred Allen guest starred on the show, and or at least try to on all the shows I can. I know he guest starred on the Phil Harris show, and so I'm going to try and find that episode. To begin with, though, of course, tonight we have Fred Allen. Tomorrow night, we have The Big Show, which is going to be on every Saturday, and it's an episode with Fred Allen in it, and Tallulah Bankhead doing one of their skits that that they became famous for, and so it's going to be neat to hear that skit again. As some of you who've heard a recent episode I aired will have heard the skit for the second time, but it's so well done that it's worth hearing. The later part of that show has Duffy's Tavern, featuring Ed Gardner as Archie. And it has Fred Allen in there and so forth, and that's a lot of fun. And they refer to when Fred Allen guest starred on Duffy's Tavern. And so I'll be playing that on the Duffy's Tavern this week, will be the episode guest starring Fred Allen. And Bob Hope, I'll play the show, one of the shows with Fred Allen as a guest star, and Charlie McCarthy will have Fred Allen as a guest star. Phil Harris, I'll try and find the one with Fred Allen as a guest star. And let's see, what else do I play? well, suspense. You know, really, well, I'll have to see how far I want to go, but I could truly play throughout the week Fred Allen on every single show, pretty much, because he guest starred on almost everything. I'm not sure if he guest starred on Burns and Allen, but I would guess I wouldn't be surprised if he did. So I will, I'll see what I can dig up and see what I feel like doing, and so we might have a whole week of Fred Allen shows. So I hope you enjoy all that next week, actually starting today. So keep tuning in if you're a big Fred Allen fan, and you get to hear him on lots of different shows. I enjoy him on all his performances. He does such a brilliant job of coming onto a show and giving it his own personality. Certainly sounds like, from what they say on the shows, like he rewrites his portion a lot to add more pieces to it, kind of like Bob Hope does. He brings his all his writers in to rewrite portions of the show that he's going to be on. I think in Fred's case, he just did the writing. But anyway, enjoy this episode. It's I found it a really enjoyable episode. Not quite up to the level of the episodes we've had recently, but it's hard to live up to that. You can't do a home run every single time, but it's kind of fun to hear a show that doesn't click all the way and have Fred make jokes about the show failing somewhat, and I always think that's fun too. Just like Johnny Carson always made fun of his bits that didn't go as well as he'd planned. Anyway, enjoy this episode. Keep tuning in all week for more Fred Allen.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next voice you will hear will be that of Fred Allen in person.
Thank you, and good evening. Say, Jimmy, yes, what was that digest introduction there? What about my build-up? What am I, suddenly a spot announcement or something? Why, Bulova gives the Time a better send-off than that. What is the big idea?
Well, look, Fred, the first thing an announcer learns in radio is never to give a big build-up to something that isn't going to follow through.
Mr. Wallington, you don't mug, just read the thing. If you have friends in the audience, you can talk to them during the commercial. Mr. Wallington, are you hinting that tonight's program is a potential blitzer?
Well, all I know is that I was at rehearsal. Nothing made me laugh.
It didn't?
No. You know, Fred, I am known as Jimmy, it takes a good one to make me laugh, Wallington.
Well, I only wish you were more like Don Anything Goes Wilson. You know, Benny shows feathers in his underwear every Sunday night. The guy. Well, my luck, I got a pessimist for an announcer. What am I going to do? Hello, Kenny.
Hello, Mr.
Better late than never. I thought you'd be going through on the 12-4. You're coming through at 12. Well, you're just in time, Kenny, it says here. You were at rehearsal today after this little trouble with Mr. Wallington, and it takes a good one to make me laugh, Wallington. You were at rehearsal. Now, what do you think of our program?
Oh, it's all right, I guess.
Well, only all right, Kenny. You don't think it's convulsing?
Well, I don't think that joke I have on page 14 is funny.
Which one?
Well, the one where you say to me, did you see Betty Davis in the letter?
Yeah.
And I say, no, I didn't shake out the envelope.
Why, what's wrong with it, Kenny? Why, that joke is as hot as a fireman's destination. Why, the script is loaded with these as you get along, page after page. I hope not. I listened at rehearsal. I was tied up directing the band, you know. Goodman is only a figurehead here. I was conducting. And I distinctly remember some lusty abdominal guffaws.
You mean when Mr. Goodman fell into the orchestra pit?
Yeah. That was a riotous moment.
The orchestra didn't laugh.
Why not?
No blood.
Well, now that Kenny has brought this brief episode to an hilarious, albeit messy close, we turn... I must watch those big words coming one on top of the other there. We turn to the latest news of the week. The Texaco News presents one highlight from the world of news. New Haven, Connecticut, Columbus, Ohio, Evanston, Illinois, and all stadiums east and west. As the final whistle blew on gridirons throughout the country last Saturday, the curtain descended on college football for 1940. Tonight, the Texaco News brings you the high and low lights that studded the hectic football season that has just come to a close. First, a prominent educator who ignored the game entirely this year, Professor Emeritus Quince. Now, Professor Quince, about football...
Football, bah!
What do you mean, football?
Bah! What is football? 22 adolescents in the process of being educated, committing group mayhem to retain possession of one cubic foot of wind encased in the epidermis of a swine. It ought to be abolished.
Well, if you abolish football, Professor, what sport would replace it?
Logarithms.
Logarithms?
Yes.
Well, how could you play logarithms?
The same as football. Except the center, instead of passing a ball, would pass a logarithm.
Yeah.
The backfield would carry a roll-top desk.
The three men in the backfield with the roll-top desk,
yes.
I see.
Now the whistle blows.
Yeah.
The center snaps back the logarithm. Both teams huddle around the desk.
Uh-huh.
The first team to work out the logarithm gets 6 points. The crowd cheers. The band plays, I got a logarithm, I got a logarithm.
Professor, have you ever caught yourself talking to a pistachio?
Do you think I'm a nut?
I certainly do, and I'm generally right, and thank you, Professor Emeritus Quince. A young lady football fan who didn't miss a single football game all season is Miss Sunny Trite. You saw all the college games, Sunny?
Yeah. Everybody calls me Sugar.
Sugar? Why?
Because I'm always in the bowl.
Oh. You know all of the football players, do you?
Name any college, and I'll show you the fullback's class pin.
Really?
I've been going out with college boys since I was knee-high to a raccoon.
You don't say.
I got their numbers, brother.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, for instance, there's the studious college boy.
Yeah?
He'll read you like a book.
Yes?
Then there are the college bridge player. He's all hands.
Uh-huh.
And the college baseball player. He'll pitch a little woe.
I see. And which type of college boy do you prefer?
Well, for the last 2 years, I've been concentrating on football players only.
Why?
Well, I ain't getting no younger.
Well, no.
And the way it looks to me, I'm a cinch to end up in the old maid's home.
And you're going to football games so that when you're sitting there in the old maid's home...
I'll have more passes to remember than any other old maid in the journey.
Miss Sunny Trout. And now a little-known player who has just completed a hard season on the gridiron, Bull Morrow. How long have you been playing football, Bull?
I've been playing college football 20 years.
You've been going to college for 20 years?
Yeah. I was a freshman in one college for 4 years.
Really?
Yeah. When I left, I was a senior freshman.
Well, I guess you can go way back in college football, Bull.
Yeah. I played against the Navy when John Paul Jones was at tackle.
Don't say.
Yeah. I played against the Army when Pershing was their quarterback.
Fancy that.
Yeah, Pershing played quarterback on a horse.
Really?
After you tackled the horse, you had to tackle Pershing.
Well, tell me, Bull, confidentially, did you have a good season this year?
Well, we only lost one game, 6-0.
Well, how did that happen?
Well, their fullback got in the clear. I could have nailed him, but I turned the other way on purpose.
Why?
I didn't have the heart to tackle my own son.
Well, would you say a fellow can play college football all his life?
Well, if he's got a specialty, he can, like me. I got a specialty. That's what keeps me going.
What is your specialty, Bull?
Running around my own end.
You run around your own end?
I've been running around my own end for years.
Well, doesn't the view get rather monotonous?
Yeah, it does, but it's a living and I'm out in the open. Oh.
Say, by the way, Bull, what college did you play for this year?
The letter's right here in me sweater.
What is it?
I don't know. I can't read neither, bud.
Thank you, Bull Morrow. And now two oddities that went unnoticed during the college gridiron year. The man who had the least to do during the 1940 season was Thurber Quint. How many games did you participate in, Thurber?
I worked in 8 games and I didn't do nothing.
You don't say.
Through 3 of the games, I slept.
Yes?
In 2 other games, I was put out of the stadium for loitering.
Yeah?
Last Saturday, I was pinched during the game for vagrancy.
Well, I don't...
They hired me to work, and then they don't give me nothing to do.
Well, if you slept through 3 games, were ejected for loitering and arrested for vagrancy, what were you supposed to be doing at these games all season?
I was keeping score for Yale.
A mythical task you
for
had.
For Yale and me both. We got plenty of nothing.
The outstanding innovation of the past football year was the attempt by a Harvard senior to make cheering more literate. As a Harvard man, T.J. Smythe III, aptly puts it,
football cheers today blend the cadence of the jungle with the jargon of the gutter.
You mean they don't make sense?
My point exactly. Rickety X-go-X-go-X, for example. Now, what is that? A surrealist grouping of vowels and consonants utterly devoid of meaning.
Well, how did you attempt to revolutionize cheering, Mr. Smythe?
At Harvard, we endeavored to clarify the cheer as it progressed.
Well, can you demonstrate this new Harvard method?
Yes, I've brought a few Harvard chaps along. We'll root one out for you.
You're going to root one out, boys? Well, yes. Fine.
Ready, chaps?
Ready, Smythe?
Well, all right. All right, now let's hear the new Harvard clarified and self-explanatory cheer.
Sis! A sibilant byproduct of hissing. Boo! A hollow report emanating from a drum. Baa! The bleat of a sheep that day. Sis! As before. Boom! Previously defined. Baa! Ditto. Are we in it? Most assuredly we are. Have it! Have it! Ra! A contraction of hurrah repeated 3 times. To wit, ra! Ra! Ra!
Gentlemen, Kenny Baker, who won his letter in a raffle at the post office, sings Only Forever. Thank you, Kenny, and good luck on your opening with Unit 37 tomorrow, Kenny. Hey, is Larry Elliott around? Oh, there you are, Larry. Say, Larry, I want to congratulate you.
Congratulate me? What for, Fred?
For what you've done for a friend of mine, a former miser.
But I haven't done anything.
Oh, yes, you haven't. We both got the same script. Let me...
The suit's out.
Well, I know. That threw you off, leaving something out. Well, say, you haven't done anything. That's your line. I'll read it over. You can see how it should have been done. Yes, you have done something, Larry. This miser used to be so tight that when he got his hands on a penny, he'd squeeze it until Lincoln's beard was a Van Dyke. But today, this miserly chap is a changed man, and thanks to you, L. Elliot.
But I don't get it, Fred. What did I do?
Well, my friend heard you talking about Sky Chief, Larry, mm-hmm. and he abandoned all of his old miserly habits. Today, he buys Sky Chief for his car. Thanks to you, he has gone from motoring parsimony to extravagance.
But, wait a minute, Fred. Using Sky Chief is not an extravagance.
Using Sky Chief is not an extravagance?
It's not an extravagance.
Well, it's called the luxury gasoline, isn't it?
True enough, Fred. Motorists do know Texaco Sky Chief as the luxury gasoline. But that has nothing to do with the price. For Sky Chief costs no more than other premium fuels. Luxury merely describes Sky Chief's performance. The thrill of flying starts. Zooming pickup. The satisfaction of having smooth, soaring power.
Maestro Al Goodman and his Marfac Lubricating Orchestra have just completed 2 guitars.
And now, ladies and gentlemen.
Hello, Mr. Allen.
Oh, hello, Portman.
Well,
did you hear Mr. Goodman's Javelin Hillbillies playing two guitars?
Yes. Mr. Goodman is wonderful. He should be conducting at Carnegie Hall.
Well, I know his relatives have been saying that for years. Isn't it funny you should hit upon it, too? But I'm so afraid Mr. Goodman is doomed never to be a symphony conductor.
Why?
From the back, he doesn't look good in a rented dress suit.
Mama wants to buy some of Mr. Goodman's records.
Well, any music lovers who may be interested in buying Mr. Goodman's recordings, of course, can get them only from Al's brother-in-law, who is selling the records on 42nd Street.
On 42nd Street where?
Well, you pass the flea circus next to that hamburger Alicia on the... It's the second doorway on the right. You step over the little old lady who's selling racing forms. Go down the hall, and Al's brother-in-law is next to a fat man with no shirt on who's making books. You light a match, and his brother is right behind this fat guy. He'll give you 8-7 on a 2-1, sir.
He isn't there anymore.
Oh, did you say something, Mr. Goodman?
Yes. My brother-in-law isn't there anymore. He moved.
Well, Portland wants to buy some of your records, Maestro. Now, where can she find your brother-in-law?
At the new location.
Well, I know, but where is your brother-in-law's new location?
You know the auction room on 44th Street?
Yes.
You go in there.
In the auction room? Yes.
The auctioneer will put up a cheap article.
Yeah?
You keep bidding on it. The article will finally be sold to you.
Yes.
And when you step to the back of the auction room to get the article, which is now your property.
Yeah.
A man will be wrapping it up.
Well, naturally.
Next to him will be another fellow handing him the string.
That's your brother-in-law?
That's my brother.
Oh. Well, when I find your brother...
Ask him where my brother-in-law is.
Oh. Forget about the records, Portland. I've got my eye on an old melodeon from the Greeley Square. It was buried in the pit there years ago. I'll get it for you and give it to you later. Say, who is our guest tonight?
Well, you Portland? Said last week that every place you go in New York, people are dancing.
Oh, and how true I was and didn't know it at the time. You know that every other building on Broadway today seems to be a dance hall. Roseland, Honeymoon Haven, all the nightclubs. Chin Lee's has a dance floor.
Oh, I hear they even have dancing in the Automat.
Yes, they just opened a special slot there. If you want to dance, you drop a nickel in. The chef whistles Blueberry Hill through the slot. And you dance. Now, what I would like to know is... Where does everybody learn to do this dancing?
Oh, I think our guest can tell you.
Our guest tonight is a dance hall owner?
No. This young lady is a teacher from America's leading ballroom dancing school.
Arthur Murray's?
That's right. Mr. Allen, meet Miss Ruth Hopkins.
Well, good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
You are... Your pupils are out in force tonight, aren't they? You
I
are...
Hope so.
Pardon?
I hope so.
Oh, thank you. Ad-libbing, it's your second appearance at the microphone. Congratulations. You're doing a whale of a job, Miss Hopkins. Now, you are a tutor of terpsichore, Miss Hopkins?
I am a dancing teacher, yes, Mr. Allen.
But you look so young to have mastered the rigadoon and fling. How long have you been instructing?
Ever since I finished at college 5 years ago.
Well, did you go to college here in New York?
Yes, I got my B.A. at Hunter.
Well, how did you happen to go from campus to Congress?
It was very simple, really. After graduation, I saw an ad for teachers at the Arthur Murray School. I was engaged, and I've been there ever since.
Your B.A. turned out to stand for Big Apple, didn't it? Well, what dances did you have to master before you could instruct?
Oh, the foxtrot, waltz, tango, and the modern dances like the rumba and the conga.
Well, may I ask, what method of instruction you employ? Do you teach classes, or do you isolate the minuet apprentice?
All of our students receive individual instruction.
Well, what do you use for music? Mr. Murray doesn't rent one-man bands from the major for each couple, surely.
No, Mr. Allen, we use Victrola music.
And there's a cheap dance hall over here where they have a man who gets shortwave programs on his bridge work, and he follows the...
done away with the Victrola. Well, tell me, how many programs... Oh, you ought to see the steps they do to static when those shortwave programs... how many programs will you have a day, Miss Hopkins?
I averaged about...
Oh, now, wait. Now, let us be serious. No laughing matters. How many pupils will you have a day?
I average about 5. On a busy day, I may give 8 lessons.
8 lessons. You see, Madame Zonger, and raise her, too. Well, I didn't recognize the madam in fine print there. Well, I know that Mr. Murray has geared up his mazurka mill for mass production. And how many teachers does his school employ?
We have 110 girls instructing and 90 men teachers for the women students.
Gosh, with 200 teachers giving 6 or more lessons daily, Mr. Murray has a bustling business consisting of little holding companies, hasn't he?
Outside of New York, there are 30 or 40 other Arthur Murray schools throughout the country.
Mr. Murray has finance in his dance, all right. Well, just how does... that joke is on its last legs. We gave her another chance. Ants are out of everything from now on. Say, how does an Arthur Murray course work out? Now, let's say that I enroll, Miss Hopkins, and you are my teacher.
Well, the first thing I would teach you, Mr. Allen, is how to walk.
Oh, Miss Hopkins. Well, after all, I'm not creeping around here on all...
I mean, you'd have to learn to take graceful, rhythmic steps and correct your posture.
Well, let me explain, please. My posture normally isn't this bad, Miss Hopkins. But tonight, through an unfortunate accident, I have on a pair of cheap suspenders. Now, the suspenders won't give, so my spine has to. Well, getting back to my lessons, after I learn to walk...
I teach you a number of simple foxtrot steps.
Yeah?
After that, we'd spend some time on the waltz.
Well, how long would it be before I could walk brazenly into Roseland and be the talk of the wallflowers?
With diligent application, I'm sure you would dance very well in 3 months.
Oh, I doubt it, Miss Hopkins. From the dancing I've seen in the aisles at the Paramount, I'm afraid this new technique is too much for an old turkey trotter and a Peabody prancer like myself.
I think you'd make a wonderful dancer, Mr. Allen.
Oh, well, I might be all right for Adagio work. I could probably catch one of those girls they throw around on the first bounce. That would count. But I'm sure I couldn't cut a rug if I was dancing with skates on. But tell me, now, do you have many celebrities enroll as freshmen at your Fandango Forum?
Yes, we've taught many famous executives, writers, and professional men. At one time, we even had a senator as a pupil.
So that's what they do. Miss Hopkins, how do you keep up with new dances? Now, suppose a new rhythmic caper, the Canarsie Creep, an old Brooklyn folk dance. Suppose this old folk dance starts sweeping the land. Now, how do you manage to get it red hot and teach it to your pupils?
Well, Mr. Murray attends to that. He holds special classes for the teachers. And we are taught the latest dances as soon as they become popular.
Say, you can give a lesson or you can take it. Well, Miss Hopkins, I must confess that you have awakened the nymph in me. I'm 90% fawn, you know. The latest Gallup rating. I went up to the zoo especially for it. But I think I shall enroll with you for a course in dancing instruction.
I shall be happy to streamline your Peabody and Turkey Trot, Mr. Allen.
Well, so nice of you. If you could only finish my Texas Tommy while you're at it. Well, what modern dances do you guarantee? Texas Tommy was a famous dance before Goodman was...
I'll teach you to waltz, foxtrot, rumba.
Oh, I had better forego the rumba, Miss Hopkins.
Why?
Well, at the moment, our country is enjoying friendly relations with South America. Now, if any Latin American ambassador ever catches me doing a rumba, there's going to be a diplomatic crisis on the spot. As the boys say down Washington way, Miss Hopkins, there will be hull to pay. Ladies and gentlemen, the Martins sing one of the songs from the new Paramount picture, Love Thy Neighbor, starring Mary Martin, Rochester, and Fred Allen. The song, Dearest, Dearest I. Tonight we are honored in presenting as a special guest one of the country's most unique hobbyists, Mr. Agnew Crunch. Just what is your hobby again, Mr. Crunch?
My hobby is writing down in this album remarks made by various people on the subject of weather.
Well, it sounds fascinatingly dull, I must say. What are some of your collected fragments of weather chit-chat, Ag?
Well, here is a remark made by a man named Jones on the evening of December 3, 1907. Quote, it looks like rain, kinda, unquote.
Say, that is as neat a bit of tritery as I have ever heard.
Well, I've got some that are even better. Listen to this one. Quote, ugh, muckamuck chuck, ugh, unquote.
That is a remark about the weather?
Yes, it was made by a rain in the face during a snowstorm.
You don't say. Well, tell me, Agnew, what do you consider your most significant bit of weather conversation? I mean, the gem of your entire collection.
Oh, that is a remark that was made by a man on this very program.
Really?
Your Mr. Wellington was saying it backstage a moment ago.
Oh, we'll be get a medal from Radio Guide, I bet, before this is through. Our own Jimmy. Why, there's an honor. Say, Jimmy, what was this brilliant bit of talk you dropped about the weather?
Well, I said this. If you put off getting your car ready for winter weather, the time's growing short. So see your Texaco dealer now and avoid needless trouble, bother, and...
What? We're leaving for Old Orchard with you.
Well, folks, I've got bad news for you this evening, you all. My picture ain't a-going to premiere at Old Orchard, you
all. So what's the difference? We're packed, we'll go to Waukegan.
Well, fortunately, it isn't going there either. The picture is going to open right here in New York City.
Did Mr. Benny decide that, Mr. Allen, or did you?
No, the publicity department decided, Portland. You know how they do with pictures. They take them where they mean something to the neighbor. You know, like, if the picture's northwest mounted, they go way up in Canada, up in some Medicine Hat with it. And if it's Brigham Young, they open a picture like that, say, at Salt Lake.
I see.
Well, that's the thing. Now, the publicity department started looking at Love Thy Neighbor to find an excuse to open it someplace, you see. Well, they looked all through the picture, and they finally found a little scene where a man is eating an orange. And on the strength of that orange, they were going to open the picture in Florida.
And what happened?
Well, sir, if the research department didn't step in and find out that the orange the little man was eating was a California orange. So, of course, Florida was finished right there. Well, Paramount went back, looked through the picture again, and finally decided to open Love Thy Neighbor in New York.
Why?
They found a yellow cab in the picture. Everything settled just as Benny was running out of jokes.
Jack had plenty of jokes last Sunday.
At what price jokes? Don Wilson has to get married so that Benny can get material for a program. How Don can afford it is be too much for me.
Oh, two can live as cheaply as one.
Not on what Benny pays one. I'm expecting Pellegra to break out on that program any week. What a feeny. Benny is so tight he has to butter his lips to skin his teeth.
Oh, you ought to stop fighting with Jack, Mr. Allen.
Well, I will.
When?
When the white stuff stops sizzling when it meets the blue stuff in a settler's powder.
Why don't you two just shake hands?
Yeah, I wouldn't shake hands with that guy. Did you ever feel that limp, lifeless cubby of digits that hang on Benny? The one time I shook Benny's hand, I thought it was putty. I tried to lump it and push it back up his sleeve again.
Why don't you start a feud with somebody on this?
program. Instead of building up Jack, you can build up one of our people.
Oh, that's fine. Who can I insult on this program?
You can insult me.
Well, all right. Now you might have something there. I'll try it out. See here, Portland. That dress you have on looks like something that was gotten out of a silkworm with a zucchini. I've seen better-looking garments thrown over a birdcage in the home of a middle-class family at night.
Oh, yes? Is that a suit you have on, or are you dancing with someone?
And what about your hairdo? Is that a snood you have on, or has your papoose slipped up?
I wouldn't say that if I were you, buddy.
Who wouldn't say what?
I, Goodman, wouldn't say it.
You, Goodman, are not saying it. I, Allen, am saying it.
In the presence of Goodman, no lady is insulted.
What happens in the presence of Goodman if a lady is insulted?
Goodman leaves the room.
I'm insulting.
I'm leaving.
All right, Olson. That settles it, Johnson. Hey, he might be another Olson than Johnson, the way it's working out there.
Right, Mr. Goodman,
we're
joking.
We're just auditioning a feud.
A feud? That reminds me, I'm hungry.
Oh, no, wait. If you're hungry, Mr. Goodman, you can follow that trail of corn you just left and peck your way back to the bandstand.
I'm corny and he's growing.
Oh, go away. Go away, Ole.
That's an idea, Mr. Allen. You can start a feud with Mr. Goodman.
How can you insult a man whose idea of snappy repartee is sticking his tongue out at you? You see, there's nobody on this program, Portland, that I can really fight with.
What about Kenny?
Oh, Kenny, with that Boy Scout outlook? Oh, well, how can I get Kenny mad?
Call up names, Mr. Allen. It's a natural feud.
Well, I'll try it. I'll wait till I get him over here. Say, Crumb.
Did you call me F.A.?
Yes, I called you Crumb.
Crumb? Say, that's good. Last week I was a nutnik, this week I'm a crumb. Boy, I'm going places on this program.
Oh, Portland, look at those trusting eyes. I can't go through with it.
But you've got to start a feud, Mr. Allen.
Well, I guess Kenny's my last hope. Say, Kenny, have you ever taken a good look at your teeth?
Yes, Mr. Allen.
Did it ever occur to you that when you open your mouth, you look as though you're masticating a mahjong set?
Yeah. Revolting, isn't it?
Kenny, are you going to take that? Aren't you going to do something about it?
You bet, Porty. Next week, I'll wear a muzzle.
Oh, it's not.
Keep it up. Try some more, Mr.
Well,
A.
I can't get Kenny mad. You
say something dirty about his singing. That with tenors is murder.
Say, now, that is not only a well-read line, that is an idea. That with tenors is murder. Well, Kenny, last week I heard you sing Genie with the Light Brown Hair, and your voice had more cracks in it than the linoleum on a... Well, it's imitation stuff. There's no name for it. I'm just trying to get there. Well, on a flophouse floor. That concludes the sentence, ladies and gentlemen. Ta-ta!
You think that's something? Wait till you hear me louse up ferryboat serenade tonight.
Good, didn't I? Well, this whole thing is a waste. Well, let's go back and do it tomorrow. Kenny's got a whale of a laugh. Let's try that out. I heard you sing Genie with the Light Brown Hair, and your voice had more cracks in it than the linoleum on a flophouse floor.
You think that's something? Wait till you hear me louse up ferryboat serenade tonight.
Oh, this whole thing is a waste of time.
Kenny, are you a man or a mouse?
A man. But tell me if you see a cat coming.
Look, Kenny. Look, Kenny, give it to him back, but good.
Take a good look at Mr. Allen, Kenny.
Yes, his face, his suit.
You'll think of something mean to say back then, Kenny. Look at him.
I'm looking.
Now say something.
You think I should?
Sure, go right ahead.
Mr. Allen?
Yes, Kenny.
Gee, you're lovely.
Kenneth, I apologize. I've been an evil, risky-thinking old man trying to change your warm disposition. All I can say is that this world is a better place to live in as long as there are sweet youngsters rampant like you and Dennis Day.
What's so sweet about Dennis Day?
Kenny, was that you?
And what's so young about Dennis Day?
Well, Kenny...
He's 50 if he's a day.
Well, he's a day.
All right, he's 50 if he's a dentist then.
Now, you said enough, Kenny. You better sing your number.
Well, why don't you hire Dennis Day?
Now, Kenny...
He'll jump at $8 a week. You'll save $2.
Ladies and gentlemen, if Mr. Goodman can find his place, Kenny Baker will now sing Ferry Boat...
$6 a week and a box of Cracker Jacks, and he'll run errands for you.
Get going, Goodman.
Say, if he's a comedian, I'm a singer. Who said that?
Could you spare just a few seconds? There's a news photographer here to take the
picture. Well, I'm sorry. Not right in the middle of the program, Jimmy.
But that's what this man wants, Fred. An action shot.
Yes, Mr. Allen. A comedian at work. Now, if you'll just hold your mouth open as if you were saying something excruciatingly funny.
Now, look, Fred, you can't take a picture here in this light. The light is...
Oh, goodness. Can't you see I've got a flash bulb on my camera? Now, open the mouth a little wider, please.
Listen, if I open it any wider, Mayor LaGuardia will probably drive up here and dedicate it for a new tunnel. Bob, set off your flash bulb and get it over.
All right, Mr. Allen. Here it comes. Oh, tut.
Well, what happened? Your flash bulb didn't go off, did it?
How embarrassing. That bulb was a dud.
A dud?
Am I the one? Imagine me putting a dud bulb in my flash gun. I must be slipping.
Well, don't worry about it, friend. I put that dud in your camera.
You, Mr. Wallington? Is this sabotage?
No. Let's call it a demonstration. I wanted to show our audience that when a news cameraman presses a button of his flash gun and the flash bulb doesn't go off, it's a dud. And it's not far-fetched to speak of duds in gasoline either. The gasoline vapor that fires in your cylinders is a combination of many elements. All these elements should burn completely the instant the spark flashes. Those that don't are duds. Duds that steal power from your motor. Texaco Refining removes these duds.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Texaco Workshop players. Tonight they present a saga of big business called The Great Department Store Dilemma, or The Customer Wasn't a Midget, but they shortchanged him just the same. Music.
Department stores.
Throbbing nerve centers of the modern metropolis.
Department stores.
Mammoth merchandising marts where mankind's every want has been anticipated.
Department stores.
Where 1,000 real-life dramas are enacted every day. On each bustling floor of the great R.H. Allen department store, where our story takes place, bedlam reigns from 9 to 5. The air is fraught with hubbub.
Oh, Lord, what a
quick time.
Going up.
Bargain. Bargain.
Lingerie. Yes, lady.
Head.
Going down. Head. Going down.
Underwear.
2 hours over.
Head. Going down.
Underwear. Head.
Going up.
Going up.
Going down.
While Decibel Chaos rages in every department of the mighty R.H. Allen store, the tycoon who controls the destinies of this mastodonic enterprise races through his working day, ever mindful of the battle cry of big business, efficiency. We find R.H. Allen, the dynamic jerk, just entering his private office.
Good morning, Miss Fitt.
Good morning, Mr. Allen.
Call me R.H., Miss Fitt. It will save time. Time is money in the department store game. We have got to be efficient, Miss Fitt.
Yes, sir.
Take a memo. All floor walkers will report for shoe and spat tests immediately. Any floor walker caught with squeaky shoes will be asked to turn in his gardenia and leave. Have you got that?
Yes, sir.
Good. Make 6 copies on Kleenex. Kleenex memos can be used as hand towels later. That is efficiency, Miss Fitt, and efficiency is the keynote of our business.
But this store has been losing money for 10 years.
I know. We may be facing bankruptcy, but we'll collapse efficiently.
That reminds me. They phoned again this morning.
The receivers?
Yes. They reversed the charges.
Gad, they're trying to push me over the brink. Every nickel counts today, Miss Fitt.
Eureka, R.H.
Weems, my head bookkeeper.
They balance, R.H. They balance.
What balances, Weems?
Your books. Today ends our fiscal year.
Well?
After losing money for 10 straight years, this year...
R.H. Allen shows a profit.
No, you just came out even. So long.
Did you hear that, Miss Fitz? For the first time in 10 years, we've broken even. I've been looking at red ink so long, my eyes are permanently bloodshot. What is my next appointment there?
There's a man outside with a complaint.
Well, he won't be lonesome then, will he?
Well, now let me see. I feel like a bit of troubleshooting. Show him in.
Yes, sir. All right, we'll see you, sir.
Hello.
Yes?
Do you owe me 13 cents?
Now, just a minute. Just a minute, please.
Do you owe me 13 cents?
I heard you the first time.
Then why didn't you pay me?
Efficiency is the rule at R.H. Allen, sir. Before a refund is even considered, your complaint form must be filled out, sir. Now, I'll fill it out here. Your name?
Lorenzo Fritter.
Lorenzo Fritter. Address?
Dingley Dell Trailer Camp, Westchester.
Nature of complaint?
You owe me 13 cents.
Now, wait a minute. That is hearsay. What we want the details.
So, well, I bought 7 egg cups here. You only delivered me 6. You gotta give me 13 cents.
This isn't the pot of gold, Mr. Fritter. You are dealing with the R.H. Allen Company, the home of efficiency.
Uh-huh.
Now, if a mistake has been made, mark you, you have made it.
Oh, yeah.
Now, here. Take this slip.
Yeah.
Take this slip to the credit department.
The credit department.
They'll give you a slip there to the bookkeeping department.
You'll
get a slip there for the small claims bureau.
Yeah, the small claims.
They'll give you a slip to petty cash.
Yeah, petty
and there
cash.
You will receive a slip to the teller.
Yeah, the teller.
The teller will tell you...
What?
The teller will tell you where you can go. Now, here is your slip. Good day.
Now, look. It ain't the principle of the thing.
I know.
It's the 13
cents.
Yeah. What will I go through for 13 cents?
Couldn't you just give him the 13 cents, R.H., and get rid of him?
Give him the Do you realize what 13 cents means at this time, Miss Fitt? Why, after 10 years, the R.H. Allen books finally balance. 13 cents means a deficit. A deficit means receivership. What is that?
Elevator operator 57 is waiting.
Oh, yes. He's up on charges. Show him in here.
Yes, sir. Come and get it, 57.
Thank you, miss. You sent for me, R.H.?
Yes, 57. Serious charges have been brought against you. My elevator Gestapo, operating in well 2, reports that when you announce the articles for sale at each floor, 57, you can actually be understood.
Oh, no, sir. It is not true. I swear it is not.
We shall soon see, 57. I'm putting you to the test.
Yes, sir. I will vindicate myself. You will see.
No blustering, 57. Now, pretend you are in an elevator. You are dry. You're arriving at the third floor. What is it you say?
Third floor, Nimmons Ware, double stuffing, give him five, seven, seven, gloves, blah, blah, blah.
57. The word gloves filtered through. I distinctly heard it.
Well, I am sorry, sir. It must have been a slip of the tongue.
Well, I'll give you one more chance, 57. Now, you arrive, say, at the fourth floor. Carry on.
Yes, sir. Fourth floor, Charles Wayne, order problem, bus, strum, bang, ground, cameras, tower,
stop, problem. Stop. That word camera came through clear as a bell. Now, is that being efficient, 57?
Well, clarity is my weakness, sir. My mother was frightened by Milton Cross.
Heredity is no excuse in big business, 57. Miss Fitt, buzz for Mr. Riggs.
Yes, sir.
Oh, Riggs is not replacing me, sir.
No, 57. Riggs will take you in hand for the time. Ah, come in, Riggs. 57, Riggs here will tutor you in diction. Riggs is the greatest exponent of incomprehensibility in America. Riggs has been talking for 20 years, and no one yet has ever understood a word he has said. Riggs, meet your new pupil, 57. Get to work, boy. Gad, how can a department store be efficient if its elevator men are comprehensible?
You mean they've got to talk garbled?
Why, if shoppers can understand elevator men, they'll go right to the department they want. Why, they'll make their purchases and leave the store. But if shoppers are confused, they'll wander around for hours buying other things. Now, if I can...
What about my 13 cents?
Now, Mr. Fritter...
What am I getting here, a rookin'?
Dear Mr. Fritter...
Don't give me that, my dear Mr. Fritter. I'm missing an egg cup. You owe me 13 cents.
Did you check at the credit department?
Yeah.
Did you go to the bookkeeping department?
Yeah.
The small claims bureau?
Yeah.
The teller?
Yeah.
And what did the teller tell you?
You owe me 13 cents.
Clean this up once and for all. Miss Fitt, buzz for Felton, our vice president in charge of egg cup bundling.
Yes, sir.
No reveille on the buzzer, please.
Now, look, either I get that egg cup or get my 13 cents.
Now, see here. You can't bully an efficient organization, Fritter.
No,
please. You buzzed, R.H.
Yes, Felton. This customer, Fritter, claims he purchased 7 egg cups here.
Dan, I was only delivered 6.
Quiet, Fritter, please.
I recall the Fritter sale, R.H.
Good. Now, as vice president in charge of egg cup bundling, Felton, I order you to acquaint this imbecile with the fact that he is wrong.
I'm afraid I can't, sir.
Felton, there is an egg cup missing?
Yes. I took it, sir.
Felton, you...
It was an emergency, sir. A bit of wax from my artificial gardenia somehow got into my eye. I was blinded. I was reeling around the bundle counter in extreme pain. I was crying little Dixie cups.
Felton, you...
I had to purge my eye. I had no eye cup.
No eye cup, and you took an egg cup from Mr. Fritter's order?
To swash my eye, sir. I intended to put it back when I returned. The vice president in charge of twine had consummated the bundle, sir. It was on its way to the Dingley Dell trailer camp.
You see, you owe me 13 cents.
All right, Allen, we'll make restitution, Fritter. Where is that missing egg cup, Felton?
I smashed it. Everything went black. I had to conceal my cry.
Now quit stalling, Allen. Give me the 13 cents.
I can't give you the 13 cents. Felton, give Fritter here a duplicate egg cup out of stock.
But there are no more, sir. Mr. Fritter brought the last of a broken Oriental lot.
Dad, what a calamity.
Oh, wait a minute. Do I get a lawyer or do you give me the 13 cents?
You're asking the impossible, Fritter.
Now, what's so impossible? Just give me the 13 cents.
But you don't understand, Mr. Fritter. For 10 years, this store has been losing money. Receivers have been circling around and around, ready to swoop.
Uh-huh.
Today, for the first time, my books balance. My business is breaking even.
So what?
If I give you the 13 cents, R.H. Allen would show a deficit. It means bankruptcy, collapse, ruin.
That don't mean nothing to me. I got 13 cents.
Now, don't. Please, don't press your claim, Mr. Fritter. I'll do anything. I'll even step down. I'll make you the president of this company.
The president?
Yes, Mr. Fritter. You are now the president of the great R.H. Allen Company. I'll leave. Here, take my desk.
So, this desk belongs to me? The blotters, this aspirin, everything?
Not everything, Mr. Fritter.
No.
In the top drawer of that desk, I have some personal property. Those things belong to me.
What things?
There are 5 2-cent stamps and 3 postcards.
So what? You owe me 13 cents.
And now, a thought for today and tomorrow from Larry Elliott.
Long before the days of the automobile, Americans gave the name station to the place...